you flying high, but still can't touch the sky.
But on conspiracy, you doing 10 at the least.
Ain't much against them, but nobody wanna die.
Start snitching, you might never see the streets.
Nuclear testing, replacing the SAT.
What all is going on, why they worried about me?
Stem cell research, there's another you, another me.
I'm just hustling in the streets, trying to flip a couple keys.
What's those of my slow down? The laws of gravity.
I know I seen it happen to my partner, big knees.
We miss shouting
when you check. You got to try to kill. Where the hope gone? Where the hope gone?
I don't know.
I seen the whole world turn into a war zone.
Let's
see. No love in the city, keep your mask on.
Right.
Nothing grows in the jungle. Right. On the flip side, she's shaking the backside.
Shake it for me, shake it.
The only way to wish it gon' come.
Yo.
He got a crush on Mary Jane, unless you got five.
All right, welcome to another edition of Degenerates. We got a special guest, Keegan Lowe. Hopefully he'll be joining us on a semi-regular basis, but other than that, it's Will Hathaway and myself as usual. Pretty big day in the NBA. Mikhail got canned. We're going to dive right into it because we all got a UNC game we want to get to. 11 games, pretty short leash for a guy who took his team to the NBA final or to the Western Conference Finals last year. Let's just start with Keegan. You think they should have given him a little more time, or was it time for Mikhail to go?
I think you got to give him a little more time. I mean, the thing I think that their biggest mistake, I guess, was giving them, you know, they give him the 3-year, $12 million contract, fully guaranteed. So you're paying a guy $12 million, and then you fire him 11 games in. I don't think Dwight played 4 of the 11. I think it's, I mean, they went to the Western Conference Finals last year. I don't think this guy just all of a sudden, you know, lost, didn't know how to coach. I mean, they just added Lawson. I think the Rockets were one of those teams that I think a lot of people thought were going to be good, but it also might, it was going to take a little time. It wasn't like the Warriors who were bringing back the same team. I mean, Lawson is a big kind of dynamite, whether you're going to start him, add him on your second unit, whatnot. So I would have liked to see them give him more than 11 games, especially with Dwight missing some of those. I know Beverly's been hurt. I just feel like that was very – there's a short-sighted decision, I thought.
Yeah, I'm kind of – I have that – I have a similar take to you. What about you, Hathaway?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fully on board with that. I think what it kind of goes through my mind is, you know, when you have a team with such big superstars and a big decision is like this is made – it sort of like makes me wonder, like, did they go to Dwight Howard and James Harden basically and say, like, you know, you guys want this guy or not? And I'm, you know, they had to, I'm sure they went to them and were, and I guess they both are just sort of like, yeah, like let's get rid of him. Just like that sort of thought went through my mind where it's like, hey, like you guys haven't been playing great. Like, do you guys see it turning this around? Like that sort of thing. And that's the only really way I could really see justifying getting rid of him this early, because otherwise, you know, give him a
little
more time.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, but I can't see any way that that could possibly be true, because I would have thought those guys would have been consulted before the extension was signed. You know, if your best players don't like the coach, I don't think that's any secret. I don't think it's like with some new revelation that was discovered 11 games into the season. And Keegan, you weren't, obviously haven't heard the first episode, but the first one we ever did, we went through our playoff predictions, and I had the Rockets finishing fourth in the West. Hathaway had them finishing third. So this is obviously we were both one of those or two of those people who were kind of not drinking the Kool-Aid, but we bought into the Rockets team. I mean, that's two notches below where they were last year, but finishing fourth in the West is pretty solid, and they've had a pretty dismal season so far. I just don't see how go ahead.
I think that was kind of, you also don't fire a coach 11 games into the year unless expectations are just sky high. And I wonder if expectations were too high almost. I mean, they weren't the Warriors last year. I mean, they had one of the great playoff comebacks to get to the finals over the Clippers to the Western Conference Finals. And I think adding Lawson, I think they thought it was going to come in and everything's great. You know, all we did is add Lawson, now we're with the Warriors. I just didn't see, like you said, 11 games is just not enough time when you have a good team, you're adding other parts to say, oh, see us, but you can keep the $12 million we gave you. You know, I just, it didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, well, Ty Lawson, like you were talking about Dwight only playing however small amount of games he played, that's basically Ty Lawson didn't get to play with Dwight at all going into the season because he didn't play in the preseason and he didn't play every game of the regular season. So it makes this, like, the sample size of firing Mikhail even smaller because your big free agent move and your all-NBA center barely got a chance to get any kind of chemistry going. And it's Harden's a guy who likes to handle the ball. He basically played point guard for them last year. So bringing in Lawson, who's a true point guard, was you had to know right off the bat that they were going to be some adjustment issues. And I don't think they really gave Mikhail a chance to figure him out.
Yeah, I think one of the big things that we're sort of sleeping on, or maybe not sleeping on, just haven't mentioned, is the fact that the elephant in the room is when there's a guy like Thibodeau out there and you can, like, get rid of Mikhail, go get Thibodeau before the offseason, before having to do any courtship or anything like that. I mean, we know the Rockets can score the ball. Their whole thing has sort of been, like, can you get James Harden, Ty Lawson to defend? Now, I'm not saying Thibodeau is a great fit for those kind of personalities, but, like, when there's a guy like that out there, maybe that's sort of where they're seeing. And I think that's sort of a logical step instead of just sort of doing the, like, interim head coach. Kind of a risky move, like, picking up a new coach with, like, new schemes and stuff in the season, but I think they were sort of like, you know what, let's just give this a run and we'll see if they get Thibodeau.
No, that's a valid point. I mean, they are ranked 29th in the league in defense. And I mean, they were talking. I just don't believe JB Bickerstaff, no matter how much they say they have confidence in him, there's no way he can be a long-term move. I mean, I think you might be onto something with Thibodeau. Keegan, you see anything like that where they could potentially be positioning themselves to pick up Thibodeau here in the near future?
I mean, I think it makes sense. And I'm kind of with you on the JB Bickerstaff point. I mean, so you have this team, you know, obviously you're not going to accept anything less than excellence almost if you're going to fire your coach after 11 games. And now you're handing the keys to a 36-year-old who has no coaching experience, like as a head coach. You know, that move doesn't make sense to me. Unless they're going to do it for a few games. You know, I don't see why. If you don't think Kevin McHale is good enough to lead your team in the playoffs, then why is JB Bickerstaff? I mean, what has he shown? And, you know, is he some great practice coach or something? You know, that doesn't make sense to me. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you guys. If Thibodeau, Mark Jackson, I guess there's another one that would be out there that I could think of off the top of my head. But, I mean, there would seem to be something bigger at play here if you're going to waste $12 million and fire your coach that just went to the Western Conference Finals 11 games in the season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it sounds like we're all on the same page there. All this being said, though, I was never a huge fan of Kevin McHale as a coach. I mean, I know he's had success with the Rockets and finishing second in the West, going to the Western Conference Finals, and the comeback against the Clippers was all great. But I never totally bought into him. It just, the move seems really bizarre unless they know they have a bigger picture in mind with someone like Hathaway said in Thibodeau, or maybe, as you just said, Mark Jackson. Because there's no way they would can McHale and basically just write him a check for $12 million and send him on vacation to have J.B. Bickerstaff be their head coach, and he's never been a head coach in the National Basketball League. So it sounds like, you know, we're all on the same page there. Too early, unless they have a bigger plan in mind. I don't know. Maybe they've been in talks with someone like Thibodeau, and they knew sooner rather than later if he's ultimately going to be the guy. Maybe they just decided sooner rather than later, so they just fired him now to give – I mean, if they do sign him in the near future, that gives them more time with the team to get the schemes and everything down so that they're good to go come playoff time. And that brings up another side of it. Do either of you guys think there's any chance they don't make the playoffs?
I think they get it righted. I think they right the ship. I mean, let's say, like, worst case for, like, them turning everything around is, like, they hire Thibodeau and he brings in, like, is he going to bring in his whole staff? I don't know. That's sort of, like, the stuff that worries me is, like, if they're going to do these things that we're thinking, like, are they going to be like, but you have to keep JB Bickerstaff? Or, like, I don't know. So that's the only thing that worries me, but I just think they have too much talent and eventually the cream's going to sort of rise to the top.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't see them missing the playoffs. I mean, I don't know if they'll contend for a top four spot, like we all thought they were going to. But I think James Harden will eventually figure it out. I think something about his off season kind of and the way he's played in the first 11 games leads me to believe that he wasn't, I mean, with the Adidas deal and the whole Kardashian thing, I know it's like kind of funny to laugh at, but it just, and he hadn't played well in the first 11 games. He was, what, second in the MVP voting this year, and now he's shooting like 35% from the field and like 26% from the three-point line. Like, he just hadn't played well. And so eventually he's just going to play better. He's too good not to, and I think when you have a guy like James Harden, not even including Dwight Howard and Ty Lawson and Patrick Beverley and those other guys, I think they'll get it fixed. They'll be I still see them at the fifth, sixth seed with not too much of an issue, really. I mean, I would still take them over a team like the Grizzlies or, you know, some of those other teams that are right there in that 6-7-8 range once James Harden figured it out, because I feel like NBA coaches, JB, as long as JB doesn't come in and just screw up everything, as long as he just lets Harden kind of do his thing, I think eventually he'll figure it out and they'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'm on the same page. I don't see any way that this team doesn't make the playoffs. And I mean, I feel like the writing is on the wall a little bit with, in the sense that Jay probably hired JB Bickerstaff as the interim head coach because he has a really good relationship with guys like Harden and Dwight Howard. So from that perspective, I would assume that would be a good thing for Harden to get his game back, having, you know, maybe a better relationship with the coach or something like that. But there's no way this team doesn't make the playoffs for me. They're too good. James Harden is one of the best players in the league. I mean, he basically, more or less on his own, got them to the two seed last year. He was very much a contender in the MVP conversation. If you asked him, I'm sure, and I think he has said that he thought he deserved to be MVP. But, I mean, DeMarcus Cousins also said the MVP is his to lose this year, so these guys sometimes can be a little bit delusional. So, all right, so we're on the same page with the Rockets. We think they'll figure it out, but we don't agree with the McHale move unless they have a bigger plan in mind here. Next thing, I bet on the Thunder 2 days ago when they played the Grizzlies, and Mario Chalmers, I never thought I would lose a bet because Mario Chalmers went for 30, and it happened Monday night. Do you guys think Chalmers is going to be – Mike Conley's obviously the point guard, and they have a pretty locked-in starting lineup. I think, in my opinion, that was a fluke. I don't see Mario Chalmers being that much of an impact for the Grizzlies this year beyond a game here or there. Especially in the playoffs, I don't think he'll do much. It's still Conley's deal. Do either of you think this is a great addition for them?
I think it's like really does. If I was Mario Chalmers, I would be ecstatic in the move. I think like he's sort of had run his time in Miami, had always been like a guy where he's just overshadowed by everyone. And I think if he's the kind of guy, if you give him some more shots, he can really like turn it on, as we saw in the fourth quarter. And he's just for the Grizzlies, who's a team that's like locked down D, struggles with scoring from time to time. It seems sort of like the best case scenario for them. It's like if Mario Chalmers comes in, he's got a hot hand. You just ride the hot hand, and Tony Allen, it's like you can have a seat for, you know, while we ride the hot hand. Then it does, you know, bring Tony Allen back in once Chalmers starts cooling off. If it's not his night, then you just roll with your starting lineup. I mean, sort of like a J.R. Smith or Nate Robinson, where it's like plug him in, hope that that they're on fire, and if they are, they'll win you the game, and if not, then it's like, all right, have a seat, you'll get him next game.
Yeah, like a four-man Jamal Crawford.
Yeah.
I think it just adds to their – I mean, the Grizzlies, they kind of are what they are, and they've been that way for a while. They're a good defensive team. Like you said, their lineup's kind of have been set for a while. And I don't think – I'm kind of with you. I don't think this move, you know, pushes them to the up with the Spurs and the Warriors or the Thunder or anything like that. But I think it just makes a deep, good team a little bit deeper and a little bit better. I don't know if it will win them an extra series in the playoffs or anything like that, but I don't think Chalmers is just a good NBA point guard. And when you already have Conley to add Chalmers, you know, I don't think – it definitely doesn't hurt, but I don't think it's game-changing either or playoff series-changing, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think it's playoff changing. The one thing I will say about the trade is having a backup point guard is pretty important. Having a guy that can be effective on with the second unit, or you know, and if there's a situation where Conley were to get hurt for a series, you know, for like a month in the middle of the regular season, having a guy who could keep it together is valuable to on that level. But I don't think this move is making them any better or any worse come when push comes to shove in the playoffs.
I'm just trying to think. Would you put Mario Chalmers as the best backup point guard in the NBA right now? Like, I'm trying to think who else is out there. It's like when he comes in and he's facing the second unit, like, who out there is, like, really, you know,
Isaiah Thomas?
I'm trying to think of teams with, like, relatively deep.
Dennis Schroeder, backup point guard for the Hawks.
Definitely.
Probably better.
I agree with that.
I think that really does help the
Grizzlies a lot.
Yeah, I mean, having a backup point guard is important, but like as Keegan was saying, I don't think it's going to win them anything more or less than they would have won without him.
It definitely affects regular season more than postseason stuff. Like maybe gets them a seed or two better at most, and then if that helps them to the point where they could get home court or something like that. But other than that, I don't think it's like going to be groundbreaking or anything.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Next thing, we've done this a couple times, Keegan. On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about the Durant and Anthony Davis injuries?
Oh, I would have definitely different numbers on those.
Of course.
The Anthony Davis, that scares me. And it's not because, I mean, I still think he's one of the best five players in the league or whatnot, but it's just the amount of injuries to different body parts. It's never the same. It's always something different. I mean, you look and 1 week it's his knee, 1 week it's his shoulder. I saw something, he's had like 12 or 14 or something different injuries in the last 2 years that he's missed multiple games with. And it's just, I don't know, it just, at what point is he going to stop getting nicked up or, you know, and I guess with the reason I'm not as concerned as Durant is because they still have Westbrook. You know, if Durant has to miss 2 weeks to rest his foot, they're going to be fine. If Anthony Davis is out for a game, they're losing that game. You know, the Pelicans aren't going to win, and I think you've seen that. What are they, 1-10 or something this year? That team is not good enough to do anything without Anthony Davis. So, and especially in the West, if Anthony Davis misses 20 games. And they go 5-10, which is may even be generous. I don't know. Can you come back from that? Can you be good enough in the other 62 games with him to make the playoffs? And even if you do, you're an 8th seed, and then good luck in Golden State. So the Durant injury, I mean, yeah, the foot is concerning, I guess. But I mean, like I said, they have Westbrook, and Durant's still Durant when he's in there. So I don't. The Thunder as a whole don't worry me as much. But yeah, the Anthony Davis thing, I think that's a big deal, and I think it's kind of costing the Pelicans more so than any other injury in the league.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, it sounds like the Anthony Davis thing is about is pretty close to a 10 on the how worried are you for the Pelicans. I mean, it sounds like you're pretty concerned.
If I had to put a number on it, I'd go 10 for Anthony Davis and, let's say, a 5 for Kevin Durant, just because the foot thing – they say those things linger, so that scares me a little bit, but not terribly.
All right. Hathaway?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm relatively on the same page. Like, in terms of, like, for the Pelicans team, Anthony Davis being hurt is a full-on 10. For Anthony Davis himself, yeah, I'm going to put it at around, like, an 8 or 9. I mean, the guy gets banged up here and there all the time. You know, he is a big man, and he's – I mean, he's not, like, I wouldn't say he's frail or skinny, but he's just, like, when your wingspan is that big and you're that tall, you're going to get a lot of those sort of nicks. I mean, unless you know, big guys just get sort of knocked around and banged up. So I don't know if that's just something that goes on throughout his whole career. I mean, he's obviously fine. He has a, you know, giga-million contract, so he's probably not too worried about it. I mean, obviously he wants to play and go to the playoffs and whatnot, but I mean, for him, yeah, I mean, I guess I would be a little bit less worried just because it's, you know, he'll be back. I mean, the one thing he has to worry about is coming back too early, like Keegan was saying, to try to, like, get the Pelicans to win some games, because they definitely aren't winning without him. As for Durant, yeah, I think for the Thunder, Westbrook can carry them, and they're a good enough team where they just sort of need to get in the playoffs and hope Durant's healthy. So I'm going to be pretty much on the same page with Keegan. Might even, like, downgrade it to, like, a 3 or 4 just because he can take as long as he wants. And, you know, he seems like a smart guy where he's going to sort of, if he feels any sort of discomfort, just sit out a couple games, look at the bigger picture, because he knows that they can get to the playoffs without him.
Okay. I'm completely with you guys being very concerned about Anthony Davis. I mean, they're 1-10, and he's played in 9 games. So if he's not playing, and they have the only team worse on defense points per game than the Rockets is the Pelicans. If they lose Anthony Davis, they're legitimately one of the worst teams in the league, which is a testament to how good he is. But like Keegan was saying, this is a reoccurring issue with him, and they can't afford to have him miss 15, 20 games in a season, because then that's 15, 20 losses you're eating, and in the Western Conference, you're not making the playoffs. I'm a little more concerned than you guys seem to be about Durant, because right now it's 2 weeks, but this foot thing is, I've been worried about it since it happened, because with these big guys, Durant's, you know, legitimately 7 feet tall, but sometimes these foot problems can linger. This, I'm concerned that this problem, he comes back and next thing you know, he's out for the year. And it's because you've seen it before with some of these guys. So I would say Anthony Davis is a 10. He can't afford to miss games. But I'm going to go a little higher than you guys and go with like a 7 for Durant, and at least until he comes back healthy for at least like a month straight. I'm a little more concerned about the Thunder than I think you guys are. But I definitely agree they can still make the playoffs potentially without him. Because last year, people like to say they didn't make the playoffs last year, but Ibaka was hurt also. So that was a huge blow. It was basically Westbrook alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we have a couple mystery debates that are going to be brought up. Hathaway has one. What's the debate, Hathaway?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just watching Steph Curry every night do his thing. You know, people are starting to compare him to LeBron, to other players. I was going to take it a step further and sort of say, where would you put Steph Curry as all time sort of below the rim players? Because I don't think you could ever put him as like the best player, because if a player can't like dunk like Jordan and LeBron and Kobe and those guys did, they just, in my opinion, and you know, but I mean, so where do you have him as right now sort of your all time below the rim? And that's not necessarily just point guards. I mean, for me, what comes to mind are sort of the Isaiah Thomases, Steve Nash, but then like you could throw in like a Larry Bird, sort of, you know, just like the fundamental shooter or assist dribbling magicians. Like, where do you have him all time on there?
I'll go first. Give Keegan some time to think about it. As far as shooting, I mean, this is also a little biased because I didn't get to see some of the guys. Like Larry Bird and everything like that. So I'm probably a little biased, and it's obviously early, but I think Curry's the best shooter of all time. I mean, him and Bird probably are the two best shooters of all time. But Curry's also added an element to his game where he doesn't have to be a super athletic guy to get to the rim because of the way – and he finishes better than anyone in the league. He can go high off the glass. He uses both hands really well. He's got a great floater game. And he's added pieces every year. So I don't think he necessarily has – you don't necessarily have to be super athletic to get into the lane and to finish around the rim. The big thing for me with Steph is it's just too early to tell, because with this Warriors team, the way they're looking this year, they could, I mean, who knows, who's to say they can't rattle off 3 or 4 titles before it's all said and done. And if that happens, and he continues to put up the numbers he's putting up, I would be inclined to say he's, you know, top 3, But the problem is, it's still early. He only has the one MVP and the one ring, just because they haven't been this team hasn't been assembled very long. He hasn't been in the league that long. My big problem is he's the point guard of the best team over the past 2 years, and he doesn't even lead his team in assists. So that when you're judging a point guard dominated conversation, I feel like a big thing is I would want that guy, if you know you're talking best ever category, I would want that guy playing the point guard position to average a lot more than 5.9 assists a game. What about Keegan? Mm-hmm. You can go from there. I guess I didn't really give a concrete answer because I don't know if you're looking for like a number, but I'd say if he wants to be considered top three, he needs to get to more around at least close to double digits in assists. But when it's all said and done, in the next couple of years.
Well, I'll start with the caveat that I'm about as high on Steph Curry as you can be. Not necessarily because I think he is like Rob was saying. I didn't see Larry Bird play a lot, but for my money, Steph Curry is the best shooter I've ever seen. But more than that, and more than assists or winning games or whatever, I think he's changed the game, and I think he's done it in less than a couple of years. I mean, now every team, it seems like in the NBA, is focused on spreading the floor out and shooting threes, and I think Curry has a lot more to do with that than anyone. And I think I give him a lot of credit there. That's when you know you're really good, and that's when you know you have a place in the all-time ranks, is when the way you play changes the game. I think, you know, Michael Jordan changed the game. There was a generation with the Kobes and stuff that their game was, you know, dribble it down the court, ISO, step back, fadeaways, you know, that was the game. And I think Curry is teetering on that with the way he's single-handedly changed the league. I mean, you're already seeing, I've obviously watched a lot of Hornets games. The Hornets' sole focus in the offseason was to spread everyone out and just hike up as many threes as they can, because that's the NBA now. And I think Curry and the Warriors in general, I guess Klay Thompson has a lot to do with that, but I think Curry is kind of the face of that. And when you're the face of a change of the entire association, I think I give you a lot of credit in the all-time ranks, because obviously your peers have a lot of respect for what you're doing if they're trying to duplicate you. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of like right where you guys are in terms of like he is – right now, like if you were going by like right now, obviously I think he could project higher than like easily Isaiah Thomas and Steve Nash and those guys. And like, I guess if we're doing the below the rim thing, I just sort of did that to rule out some of the like bigger guys and like big men. But like, if he keeps up this trajectory, like he's already laid the groundwork where if he just basically puts what he's been doing for his career in cruise control, and like Rob says, gets maybe like seven more seasons, maybe an MVP or two, like a finals MVP, wins maybe two more rings, then I think he cracks into that sort of like top three of this debate below the rim. Maybe probably I would give him number one. And then easily in the like all-time ranks at some point, because everyone just cares so much about championships and all-star appearances and MVPs and things like that. So it's like if he keeps playing like this and just goes cruise control for like five more seasons, he'll have those if the Warriors can stay together and healthy and stuff. So yeah, I think there's really no debate, I guess, but I just wanted to sort of see where you guys were on Steph Curry.
Yeah, well, the thing for me is, though, he's putting up 33.7 points a game on 52% shooting. And for a guy who shoots almost 11.5 threes a game, when you're shooting 52% from the field, that's extremely impressive. No one can discredit any of his numbers. But if we're talking about, you know, best all time and you're a point guard, you got to lead your team in points. And another thing is, he can't go to the finals. If let's say they go five more times before his career is over, he can't go to the finals and do what he did last year. You have to go to the finals and you have to get the MVP if you're going to be considered, top three point guards of all time, top three below the rim guys of all time, whatever it is. it's like Jordan went to the final six times, won six MVPs. And Curry is a guy who, I mean, he didn't play that well in the finals. I know he got banged up against the Rockets on that one play. But if we're talking best all time, you got to win the finals MVPs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think definitely the weakest part of his resume, if that's what you want to call it at this point, is the team resume. I think a lot of that had to do with the Warriors were just kind of a joke franchise for a while there in the 90s and early 2000s. But I think I'm not as worried about the team aspect of it and about, you know, the assist or the finals performance because of just what he's done individually. I mean, I think I saw where, like, his last three seasons he's made I think last season he made the most three-pointers all time in a single season at 280-something, and this year he's on pace for 420, which, I mean, so he already has the record, and then he's going to beat his own record by 50%, and it's just like he's just – the numbers he's currently putting up are just beyond anything we've ever seen. So I think I'm in agreement with you guys. As good as he has the last year and a half, if he could just find kind of a middle ground and do that for 6 or 7 years, I think it's going to be really hard for him not to be – up there with the all-time greats. But, like, you have to have the team resume, so I'm also in agreement with you on that. Like, you got to – if he just wins one championship and didn't play very well, then it's obviously going to hurt his stock. But individually, what he's doing now might be better than a lot of other guys at their peaks that we do consider on the all-time performances. He just has to keep it going for multiple years to come.
Yeah. And this is actually – go ahead.
Sorry, yeah, just like – I think we all three could agree, like, I'm willing to give him best shooter of all time, like, right now. Like, just with the fact that of his absurd shots, not to, like, in addition to spotting up, off the dribble, you know, coming off screens, anything like that. I mean, I think he's ahead of Bird, Reggie Miller. I think he's ahead of all of that stuff. Maybe, yeah, you'd like to see him do a little more in, like, the finals shooting-wise, but I mean, his highlight tapes and just absurd shots is just, you know, it just baffles me. And I think if you're going to say the best shooter of all time isn't in the top 10 NBA all time, it's kind of like, yeah, like the only thing holding him back is like his body of work. But I think, like, when it's all said and done, if the best shooter of all time in a heavy, heavy shooting-driven league isn't somewhere up in a high list, then there's something wrong with that.
Yeah, well, I think he will be if he continues to do what he's done.
Right.
And the Warriors also need
but
to do
you,
a good – am I what?
You all agree he's the best shooter of all time if you just sort of like – I mean, like right as of right now based – or
for sure. I mean, I didn't see Bird play, but I would
right.
– there's no way I would take anyone over.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some Bird highlights, and I haven't seen him do half the stuff that Curry's doing now. I mean, like I said, some of it's just stupid. Like, you know, it's become a thing where – it's exciting to stay up until 1:30 a.m. on the East Coast just to watch Steph Curry play. You know, and I mean, obviously Bird was probably just as great and his teams were probably even better maybe, but I don't know. When it comes to best shooter, I haven't seen anybody do what he's done. And I think to the point about not just standing up in the corner, you know, we think of Ray Allen or we think of Reggie Miller who had guys set them up, but to come down the floor, dribble the ball down the floor, get a screen, and then just pull up from 5 feet beyond the line, and it's good 50% of the time. I mean, that's just something that no one has ever done for this long.
Yeah. I mean, the threes he makes are tougher than the threes any spot-up shooters ever made. And the Warriors are going to need to hold on to some of these guys so that he can build, you know, the team resume and go to all these finals. And this actually is a good segue into my question that I'm going to pose to you guys. The Warriors are obviously 12-0. They barely had any scares. They had one overtime game against the Nets, which is a little weird. But here's what I'm asking. Is there any chance that they win 73 games, in your opinions?
Yeah, I'll go first on this one. I think they could honestly name their number. I think a couple back-to-backs they'll probably lose a game just for not being focused and, you know, tired, and they'll rest a couple guys. But I think if they honestly wanted to, they could win you know, 75 games. And I think it's just kind of up to them late in the year. Is that what they want to do? Because, you know, it's going to take a conscious effort, I think, to, you know, when they're at 62-8 or something with 12 games left. And it's, do you want to try to go 11-1 and win 73 games? Or do you just run a rest Curry and Clay and those guys and have them ready for the playoffs? I think you have to make – eventually they're going to have to make a choice, and so they might not make the choice. They might say, you know, I'd rather win 70 or, you know, 68 and rest than really push for it and go 73 or 74. But I haven't seen anything late last year, in the playoffs last year, in these first 12 games that makes me believe they couldn't – they couldn't win 74, 75 games if they really, really wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same thing like everyone talks about every year with the Patriots in the past couple of years. It's like, is this team can win as many games as they want, more or less. Yeah, they're going to lose a game or two, have some scares. But it's sort of like, how motivated is this team? How pissed off are they? And, like, want to make a statement? Or is it like, okay, we want to rest? And, I mean, a lot of that is determined before the season, but a lot of it is, like, how banged up are you when that time comes? So, like Keegan was saying, if they get to that, like, 60-win benchmark and they're, you know, 22 games left, or however many, I'm not saying they're perfect, but I'm saying, like, let's say they have a, you know, it's in reach. I think that the Clippers comments and things like that that people said about, you know, they kind of had a pass to the finals really pissed them off. And I think the motivation is there, and that's what makes me inclined to say, yes, they'll hit that 73 number. But it is like if Clay and Steph are sort of banged up towards the end, there's no – it's like, yeah, they're pissed and they made their statement, but they're going to rest those guys. So I think it all hinges on how fresh they're feeling, and it's sort of like, do you guys want to go for this and, you know, really go into the playoffs, go for this record, or is it like you guys think it would be better for the team to rest up?
Yeah. Okay. So this is. I totally agree. I think they could easily go 73, win 73 games. Of the 12 games they've won so far, only four of them have been in single digits, which is pretty outrageous. And the thing is, they're just a lot better than everyone else. And I know later on and in the playoffs it becomes a different game, but no one plays better NBA regular season style basketball than the Warriors. When it gets a little grittier in the playoffs and people start playing a little more defense, maybe they'll, you know, it'll be a little more challenging. But the way the NBA works in the regular season is tailor-made for this Warriors team to be extremely successful. And they're going to be hard-pressed to lose many games at all, the way I see it. I mean, they don't even have their head coach. It was like Luke Walton's like is getting it done. So I don't see any reason they can't win 73 games. But the fact of the matter is, with that, the reason I brought it up was because I was on I was looking at, you know, random odds and things, and this is now a prop that you can make. Warriors, will they win 73 games? And if you take the yes they will, it's 3-1. So like, if you were going to bet, you know, $100, you win 300 if they won 73 games. And on the other side of it, you'd have to risk, if you take the no they won't, you'd have to risk 400 just to win 100. So it's an overwhelming favorite that they will not. And I actually think it's pretty good value, because I think there's a very realistic chance that they could win 73 games. That number surprised me. I thought it was going to be a little closer to 50-50 the way they've looked so far. And I understand there's wear and tear, but I still think there's a very legitimate chance they win 73 games. So I thought at least one of you guys would say that you didn't think they would do it.
Yeah, well, see, I think that the Clippers, what Doc Rivers and what all those guys said, really did sort of piss them off. Like, I think they last year felt that they were, like, the best team in history, up there at least, should be mentioned with the Bulls. And then, like, former Bulls players coming out, like Ron Harper and them, saying, like, yeah, we would beat this team in a, you know, series. And that's just, if those things keep coming out, and more things like that, people keep doubting them, I think then they definitely get it. So I would love, like, that bet is, I think, pretty, you know, not a safe bet, obviously, but it's like the payout is just too juicy not to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the Warriors, over the past few years at least, have not been one of these teams like the Cavs or the Heat or the Spurs where they rest guys. I mean, Curry and Klay Thompson and these guys, they're a young team. Draymond and Harrison Barnes, they're very young. I don't see those guys wanting to miss any games, and I think that especially with Steve Kerr being a Bulls guy, I think this is something that this team is attacking, and you've seen it kind of in a small sample size so far this season. And I agree with you. I think they have something to prove. These things are highly publicized now. Every time someone says anything, they know about it. It's locker room wall material. Coming into the season, the Cavs were the overwhelming favorite to win the NBA championship. And obviously that's changed now because Golden State's looked so unreal. But everything that comes out against them is just fuel to the fire. And I don't think they're going to surrender any games. I know in a back-to-back, like Keegan was talking about, they'll drop a game here or there. I'm not saying they're going to go undefeated or anything. But, I mean, I think that they could easily keep their loss column to around 6 or 7, which is crazy.
And I think going off your point of they don't rest guys, it's because a lot of times, like you were saying, they only have 4 games in single digits, I think, instead. It's half the time Curry doesn't even have to play the last 10, 12 minutes. He doesn't have to come back in the fourth quarter because they're up 25. You know, so it's not like he's not playing some absurd amount of minutes. You know, it's not LeBron where LeBron's having to play 42 if the Cavs want to win every night, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Curry can play 34, 35 minutes, not really play the fourth or play maybe the first few minutes of the fourth, and they're still blowing people out by 15. So the need to take entire games off later in the season I don't think will be as necessary. And I mean, unless this is all barring injury or whatnot, and then all of our predictions would change. But, I mean, if they stay relatively healthy, then they're that much better than everyone else, that the need to rest, I think, is less with the Warriors than it would be with some of the other teams we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I just because you brought that up, and that's a really good point, that they a lot of times, you're right, they're beating teams so bad that Curry doesn't have to play the fourth quarter. So I looked into I was looking at minutes per game. Not surprising, James Harden's 1. And a lot of these really good players are in the, you know, top 10. LeBron's 8, Paul George 9. Jimmy Butler 14, Curry's 16, which is a little higher than I thought he would be. But as the season goes on, I think they'll be more. I think they'll become more favorable towards sitting him earlier because he's played from the games I've watched. He's played a lot later than he really has to, and so like. And what we're talking about, it's not just Curry. I mean, Klay Thompson's not even on that list in minutes per game. So, I mean, he's one of the better players in the league. He's an all-star. He's their second-best player. And he's not even in the top 40 in minutes per game. So, I mean, that speaks to what you were just saying, where they end up beating teams really bad and they can take these guys out so they don't get worn down and can play every night. And so everything that we're saying here is a testament to the fact that it's very possible they win 73 games, which would, you know, make them not only one of the best teams in our lifetime, but maybe the best team ever.
Yeah,
and obviously,
agree,
but you also have to get it done though. After that, I mean, winning 73 games is great, but they're still going to have to beat most likely. I mean, let's be honest, most likely the Cavs in the NBA Finals, or it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I mean, just to sort of jump in and agree with what you guys are saying, it's like Curry's minutes, while he's up 16th in the league, they're sort of like, as a baseball reference to pitchers, they call them like stress pitches, I guess, or whatever, you know, where it's like really like intense minutes, like, or pitches for baseball. Curry can go into a game and like, no, he doesn't have to be the best guy, doesn't have to have everything cranking, and can take a few plays off. Where like James Harden and LeBron and, you know, John Wall, the best player, most superstars on other teams go in every night and know the game basically goes as they go. And they are putting more stressful minutes in addition to just more minutes. So like, I think that it just, the situation looks really good for the Warriors being fresh for the whole season. Knock on wood.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a big piece. It's also the way he plays. It's like, it's so smooth and under control. He's not a guy that's attacking the rim 24/7 like, you know, like a Westbrook or a, you know, a Wall. He can kind of, he can play, he lets the game, he controls the game and does basically everything he wants to do. I mean, he literally, when you watch him play, he's out there in total control of the game. He takes and makes whatever shots he wants, which is exactly why we haven't seen him really have injury problems, because he doesn't really put, he doesn't really have to put his body on the line to be dominant, which is something I personally have never seen, because the guys who have been so good in our lifetime are guys like LeBron who are battling, and you don't really see a guy who hits so many threes dominate the way he does. And it's, you know, it's a testament to everything we're saying about him being able to stay healthy and fresh long term, and that he won't have to miss many games.
Yeah.
All right, so I think we should probably cut it off there so we can watch this game. I don't know if any either of you guys have any other things you want to bring up. All right, cool. Thanks
good.
For joining, Keegan. Hopefully we can get you on a little more. We've been talking about it. We haven't done it yet. But 1 week when there's not as much going on with maybe UNC basketball, we're hoping to do some college basketball stuff too. We might even be able to combine them and just do one show with college and the NBA. So we'll see. We'll work on that. But either way, good show. Thanks for coming, Keegan. Hopefully we can get you back on soon.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks. I would definitely be interested in the NCAA show, too. I think we have some good material for that. That'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd especially be fun for all of us since we're all UNC guys and we're looking good so far this year. All right, thanks. Thanks for tuning in.
You're flying high, but still can't touch the sky.
But on conspiracy, you're doing 10 at the least.
Everybody's against us, nobody wanna die.
Start snitching, you might never see the streets.
Nuclear testing, replacing the SAT.
What all is going on, why they worried about me?
Stem cell research, there's another you, another me.
I'm just hustling in the streets, trying to flip a couple keys.
What goes up must go down, the laws of gravity.
I know I seen it happen to my partner, big me.
We miss out
when you check. You got to